If it's local and it matters, it's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.
All right, welcome to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3. It's Thursday. I'm your host, Steve Stewart. We got a lot of stuff to talk about today, but first, want to make sure you're aware of program changes for next week. You tune in 11 o'clock next Tuesday, and I won't be here. So we'll be moving from 12 to 1 on Tuesday and Thursday. And obviously, I'm sure you've heard, if not, from Monday through Friday at 1 to 3 will be the Jeff Cameron Show. And so a lot of changes going on around here in Real Talk 93.3, which we're excited about. And so I get to talk local stuff. And then on the ride out of here, I get to listen to Jeff Cameron talk about college football mostly this fall, hopefully. So anyway, just to let you know about that program change. Again, thanks for tuning in. A lot going on. We're going to, next segment, we'll talk about the Rocky Hanna letter. A lot to unpack there. Again, the superintendent has been pushing a mask optional policy, and now he is starting to hedge his bet with this letter to Governor DeSantis, who signed an executive order saying you can't mandate masks. But I tell you, it's one thing to make a law. It's another thing to enforce it. And as we'll talk about in the next segment, there is a number of school districts around the state that are looking to get around the executive order by Ron DeSantis, and want to talk about how that's happening, how that may impact us here in Leon County. He sent a letter to Governor DeSantis, so that means that we've got to get a response, and we're running short on time. School starts next week, and so it'll be interesting to see how this unfolds. There's a school board meeting coming up on Tuesday. We'll obviously cover that. I will not be anywhere near the building there. We'll be covering it from afar, which should be interesting. But so we'll talk about that. In the bottom of the hour, we'll deal with Leon County and their decision to make an employment condition on proof of a vaccination. As that news was released, I guess last week, there are some exceptions based in the policy, and so they have released the forms for those exceptions. We've got those on our website at TallahasseeReports.com, and so you can go check those out. The two forms address religious exceptions and medical exceptions. We'll talk about that a little bit. But what we'll also talk about during that segment is just sort of the hodgepodge of policies that are going on right here in Leon County, which is really a reflection of what's going on all over the state. There's three major corporations in Florida have updated their mask policies / vaccination policies. We'll go over those. But if you look here in Leon County, on one side of Monroe Street downtown, if you don't get vaccinated, you can get fired. On the other side, all you have to do is wear a mask and social distance and you're okay. So then you look at the school board, which is further outside of downtown. They have another set of policies. Well, so we'll go over how that is all different and really what that means to people. I mean, it's like just trying to figure out, okay, I'm in this building, what am I supposed to be doing? If you're an employee, you've got to make these decisions. Is somebody really going to get fired in Leon County on October 1st if they're not vaccinated? I mean, the mayor of Boston, who's African American, has come out and just totally trashed vaccine passports. And the African American population, along with some others, are leading in low vaccination rates. So her argument was that in places like New York City, where they're requiring proof of vaccinations to get into a restaurant, that's basically tantamount to discrimination, since the number is so low in the African American community. So all kind of issues, and it doesn't, you don't have to be on one side of this issue or the other to recognize that there is a lot of policymaking going on that is not consistent, not only in the national level and the state level, but right here in your local government in Leon County. So we'll talk about that and give you the specifics. I mean, one of the things, what's driving these decisions, obviously, is the increase in cases in the Delta variant of the COVID pandemic and the COVID virus. A virus. And So when the cases started spiking, obviously everybody rushes out to try to respond. And so, you know, if the cases start to fall, obviously, then you have to deal with what's going on with regards to the policies. And, you know, Rocky Hanna, like I said, hedging his bets, is seeking just a waiver for a couple of weeks. He thinks that will buy him some time. They have always argued at the school board that they have the flexibility to deal with this virus. So anyway, we'll unpack that in the bottom of the hour. The last segment, we're going to revisit this feud back and forth between City Commissioner Jeremy Matlow and the Tallahassee Greater Chamber of Commerce, but we're not going to do it. We'll give you the sort of the background on that if you weren't listening in the last show. But I want to break apart two projects that the city is doing. Basically, two different votes for two different projects that really have a lot in common. So what we want to do, Commissioner Matlow voted for one of them and voted against the other. So we want to look at the differences in these projects, note some of the similarities, and then sort of figure out exactly why one would be more receptive than another. Now, the thing is if you weren't tuned in on Tuesday, I mean, the back and forth started with an opinion piece submitted to the Tallahassee Democrat by City Commissioner Jeremy Matlow, and obviously the response came rather quickly from the Greater Tallahassee Chamber of Commerce, and it involves corruption and the impact of the federal trial here in town. But what it also did is it really included a lot of different things, and that's what we want to separate out. I mean, if you want to talk about, you know, pay to play and federal corruption issues, you're talking about criminal activities. But when you start trying to bring in other things, maybe policy differences, and try to paint that with a brush that denotes something that's unethical or corrupt, that's when you sort of have a problem. And what I want to do is, Jeremy Matlow brought up one of these projects, the $8 million, the $8 million project, which the city voted on for the two vacant parcels downtown, and integrated that in with this opinion piece that really touched on how he believed the chamber needed to distance themselves from some players in this federal trial. And so my goal in this last segment is to give you, compare these two projects, give you some of the differences and similarities, and let you decide, you know, if this is really something that should have been included in that letter, or if is this more about policy differences? Because, you know, one of the things that we've got to be very careful of moving forward is, it is true, we'll have a federal trial here that will conclude, and if we assume that that's all that's going to happen, as I've said previously, then basically, you know, the criminal penalties have been doled out, and now what's left is people that were on the stand and admitted to doing some things that are not going to be charged. And so how do we deal with that moving forward? And I think one of the things we got to be careful about is that we don't paint with a broad brush and we start impacting policy discussions with, you know, well, look, this person, or, you know, this issue, if you vote this way, you're going to be considered corrupt or unethical. We got to be very careful with that. And, you know, this is coming from someone who, look, this is 7-8 years ago. And so, you know, I lived through it in a number of different ways, and nobody wants to make sure that we are conducting our business in a very ethical way. But at the same time, I don't want people to use that as a way to, first of all, gain more power or to impact the business community where we're trying to grow jobs here. So it's something that we've got to really pay close attention to. All right, when we get back, unfortunately, we'll have to pivot back to the discussion on the COVID policy and how it is impacting our schools, and we'll turn our attention to Superintendent Hanna's letter to Governor Ron DeSantis. So stay tuned. I'm Steve Stewart, and you're listening to Above the Fold.
Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.
Hi, welcome back to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3. Above the Fold is brought to you in part by Spartan Stoneworks, one of the most common and cost-effective upgrades anyone can make to their home is the kitchen. You're almost guaranteed to increase the value of your home with an updated kitchen, but quality materials like granite, quartz, and marble countertops can get expensive. Well, not when you go with Spartan Stoneworks. Pricing will be lower than anywhere else because they don't mark up the cost of stone materials the way they see it. Since they didn't carve it out of the mountain themselves, they're not going to charge up any made-up fees as if they did. Great pricing, amazing craftsmanship, and quick turnaround from an honest local company. Give them a call at 765-2037. That's 765-2037. And we appreciate their sponsorship of Above the Fold. Now, obviously, with school starting next week, the big question is about masks. Are kids going to have to wear masks? You know, from a local perspective, Superintendent Hannah has been pretty consistent in saying that it's going to be a mask optional policy as they have tried to drive up the number of vaccinations within the workforce at the school board. And so with the availability of that vaccine, the argument was we're going to make masks optional. There's been a couple of contentious meetings that we've reported about here. And the board, there's a couple of board members that have tried to make an argument for mandating masks. And then there's become an issue of vaccine protocol in terms of COVID protocol, which relates to vaccines. If you, get the virus, are you going to have to quarantine differently than if you were vaccinated and you get the virus? It gets very technical. But the issue now is as we start to see the reports from around the state and here locally with the number of hospitalizations increasing, school boards are faced with making these decisions right before school starts. And here in Leon County, Superintendent Hannah had always claimed that we have the flexibility to change what we're doing. So he had sent a letter to Governor DeSantis and held a press conference on Tuesday asking Governor DeSantis to give a little bit of leeway on the mask mandate. And he says, I'm asking you to allow us the flexibility and the autonomy to make the decisions for our schools that best fit our local data and information in Leon County. At this time, we would like to implement a temporary mask requirement in grades pre-K through 8th in order to help reduce the community positive rate. Now, this letter, which is, I think it's about 750, 800 words, a pretty detailed letter. And so, before we talk about the politics of it, he's basically talking about how, he's now concerned with increase of hospitalizations. He cites that, last year there were basically no hospitalizations of kids. This year he cites that in the last 10 days there has been 4 hospitalizations of kids under 14. Now, we checked with this the other day, and there was actually one pediatric COVID patient in the 2 hospitals. Obviously, that changes from day to day. But obviously, the concern that Superintendent Hannah is showing here is that the variant is, he thinks, different and affecting kids differently than the pandemic last year. So he's seeking a waiver of this executive order. Now, the politics of this, obviously, from a statewide, Governor DeSantis has been very strong and standing between the mask mandates and people that want to implement those. He's saying it's just a parent's decision, not a school's decision. It's voluntary. If you want to wear a mask, you can wear a mask. Vaccinations are available for kids 12 and greater, and also for obviously anyone that works at the school board. That's been his position. And now, from a local political standpoint, obviously Superintendent Hannah has been pushing for the mask optional. He is living in a very, obviously this is a Democrat county, and so this letter pretty much lays out a really good rationale for why he, when I say good, from his perspective, of why he wants to move in a different direction. So he is showing voters and people in Leon County that favor a mask mandate that he's doing his best to be able to get that in place, quote, temporarily. Now, if you go around the state, there are some of these other school districts that they're going ahead and saying, look, we're going to have a 2-week mask mandate beginning at school. So you say, well, how does that happen if you have an executive order that says you can't do that? Well, you may have an executive order, but what is the consequence of violating that order? Now, Governor DeSantis has tried to say that it's going to cost you money. You know, this is a lot like the county's declaration that if you don't have a vaccination on October 1st, you're going to get fired. I mean, that's where the rubber meets the road. What are these leaders going to do? So I think what some of these school boards are doing is they're gambling that it can't be implemented. We're going to go ahead and do what we think is right, a 2 to 3 week mask mandate in schools. And by the time, you know, we get caught, or by the time somebody figures out how they can keep money from us, you know, we can move on to another policy. Now, Duval County has made it a situation where it is presumed that masks will be mandated. And if parents want to opt out, you have to actually fill out some paperwork. Now, that makes it a little bit more likely that kids will be wearing masks, because parents would actually have to fill out paperwork other than it just being mask optional. So these are a lot of the, you know, a lot of the different ways that the school boards around the state are dealing with this. Now, the teacher unions have got involved. The Florida Education Association has said that they are, let's see here, let me get this real quick. It says here, the Florida Education Association Teacher Union is backing school districts trying to work around the executive order that bars schools from requiring students to wear masks. It says here, at least three county school districts, and we just talked about one of those, Broward, Alachua, Duval, are moving ahead with efforts to require masks for some or all grade levels, with the school year set to begin next week. Says here that the teacher union official says, we believe every county should be empowered to make decisions on how best to keep their students safe in consultation with local health experts and based on the unique needs and circumstances in their area. Now, so obviously there's a fight brewing here with school just getting this ready to start in the next 7 to 10 days across the state. And so what's the response is, you know, there's going to be obviously these meetings, there's going to be votes, people are going to go on record. But again, at the state level today, there's a Florida Board of Education meeting that is, they're looking to adopt a rule to allow HOPE scholarships to be provided to parents that want to withdraw their kids from a school that is requiring a mask mandate. So this is like a whack-a-mole. You know, every time a new policy is implemented, there's a workaround in the district, and then another policy is implemented to try to facilitate or people that aren't happy with that workaround. Now, the HOPE scholarship gives parents options to place their child in a safer academic environment. K through 12 students who have reported an incident of harassment, hazing, bullying, robbery, sexual assault, and more may be eligible for a scholarship to attend a private school or public school in a different school district. So what this rule, and this is going on as we speak, they're talking about changing the rules so that it would apply to kids or parents who are in districts where masks are being mandated locally. So they would be able to get a HOPE scholarship and then go to basically a private school because of a school board's decision to request or to implement a mask mandate. You know, obviously this is a step that, again, has political ramifications, because you're looking at, people who are against school choice and live in Florida. That has been every year. There are more and more options for students to be able to opt out of public school and either attend a charter school or a private school with state funds. So here is another opportunity for people that think that parents should have choices, given what is happening in schools, be it, you know, from the one side of the HOPE scholarship on the bullying or hazing. Now they're saying, well, look, this should apply in districts where masks are mandated. And so we'll have more on this, obviously, next week as the rulemaking is in process, or the discussion about doing the rulemaking is in process right now. All right. So enough of the COVID in the schools. When we get back, we'll talk about what's going on in local government here in terms of the COVID requirements as a condition for employment. So stay tuned. I'm Steve Stewart. You're listening to Above the Fold.
You're doing
If it's local and it matters, it's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.
All right, welcome back to Above the Fold here on Thursday. Real Talk 93.3. I was so ready to get it and almost choked. Anyway, program note, please note, 12 o'clock next week. 12 o'clock Tuesday and Thursday from here on out. And then at 1 o'clock, you can listen to the Jeff Cameron Show. Maybe they'll break down the team favored to win the ACC next year. I don't know. I'm not sure. Anyway, all right, we're going to pivot to employment conditions here in Leon County. As you know, Vince Long, the Leon County Government Administrator, very qualified, very well-respected, came out and basically stated that you're going to have to prove you're vaccinated by October 1st as a condition for employment. Find it hard to believe that they're going to go through the list on October 1st and start firing people, but that's what they say. Now, they did say there were going to be two forms released on exceptions related to religious exceptions and medical issues. Those have been released. They're on TowsReports.com. You can go look at them. You know, the issue here, if you look at these forms, a couple of points. The religious exceptions are pretty invasive. There's like four questions you have to answer or fill out. Please describe your sincerely held religious belief, practice, or observance that conflicts with the county mandate. Please explain how receiving the vaccination violates the tenet of your sincerely held religious belief. Number three, what accommodation are you seeking based on this sincerely held religious belief? And number four, please explain how the accommodation you are seeking will resolve the conflict between your sincerely held religious belief. So it's not really a religious belief, it's a sincerely held religious belief. And so you've got to fill out this paperwork. I don't think you have to have, I don't think you have to have anybody else sign it other than yourself. The medical issue form is a little bit shorter and it does require requires a doctor's signature. So those are the two forms. Now, you know, part of this, two things here. Part of this is pretty detailed information to be able to keep your job. And I think it's a little bit interesting to note that Mr. Long was able to put in this policy without really providing any information on what he was basing his decision on. Now, he did say, listen, you know, the hospitalizations are up and we want to be prepared to be able to provide our services. But do they have a COVID issue with the county? Can they provide some numbers? You know, are they requiring masks now within the county? But that wasn't really, it really wasn't debated. Obviously, this was a directive from the person that's responsible for leading the 2,000 or so workers at Leon County. So if you go across the street to the city, Mayor John Daley spoke at the Networks of Entrepreneurs and Business Advocates on Tuesday. And, you know, he was asked about this for the city, and the city is not going to make this a condition for employment. If you're a city employee, that's good news. They are going to implement upgrade some of their COVID policies in terms of masking. They want everybody indoors wearing a mask and obviously following the social distancing. But, you know, I think this is, again, politics starts to enter this. I mean, you've got Mr. Daley who's taken the opportunity to provide, or Mayor Daley, to provide this distinction between what they are doing and what the county is doing. Now, if you look at that and you go back and look at the school board, who right now currently is a mask optional policy, you've got three different policies across three different local governments in a county that is controlled by one political party. And so even the one political party who's in charge can't get on the same page of what they want to do. And so this does not, I don't think it provides confidence in which is the right decision or which is the right path to lead. And it provides some questions about credibility, opens up the debate for people to challenge it. Again, you know, that this is something I'm not, you know, I guess I am criticizing this. This is what happens when you have to respond on the fly. You know, you've got this virus that is coming and going with different variants. If you look at some of the stuff that, you know, some of the reports coming from the UK, you know, they had very high vaccination rates. The Delta variant still came through there and obviously is, is trending down now. The predictions I've seen here in Florida is that the number of cases will start to top out around August the 12th because of the way they're looking at the trend and the number of vaccinations. And so, you know, again, trying to craft policies, you would think you would think that some of the major leaders would be able to get on the same page and have the same policy. But, you know, if you look at it from the other side of this, they've got different constituents. You know, you look at the city and the county. The county's got about 2,000 employees that falls under this mandate. This doesn't include the people who work for the other constitutional officers, the clerk of the courts, the property appraiser, tax collector, property appraiser, and the sheriff. And so you've got the 2,000 employees there. You got maybe 2,500 employees under the city. But then you go over to the school board, and you got 34,000 students that this impacts and about 4,000 employees. So they do have different constituents. And so I guess you could see where the policies may be a little bit different depending on the politics or what the needs that they're trying to meet. I mean, obviously, when you're talking about, you know, 47,000 people, 34,000 students, and 4,000 employees, that would be about 38,000 people. I mean, to try to mandate one thing that will impact 38,000 people in a lot of different locations around the county is obviously pretty difficult. Now, obviously, we're not the only county that is dealing with this. The state of Florida is dealing with it, and so are major corporations that have wrestling with the changes that are coming on because of the increase in cases. I wanted to highlight three major corporations in Florida that are making some changes to their guidelines. So that is, you know, Publix, Disney World, and University of Orlando. But they're doing it in different ways. Publix requiring their employees to wear a mask. They are not mandating that people coming into their store wear a mask. You look at Disney, they're requiring anybody that's indoors to wear a mask. And obviously requiring all of their employees to wear a mask. Now, let me see here if there's anything on the vaccination in terms. I thought I saw something in regards to Disney World. It says here, face coverings are required for all guests ages 2 and up while indoors and in Disney buses, monorail, and Disney Skyliner, regardless of vaccination status. So this includes upon entering and throughout all attractions. Face coverings remain optional for guests in outdoor situations. And it says here that that they are remain focused on maintaining the parks in highly cleanliness ways and sanitation, implementing sanitation standards. So, you know, these are, again, corporations that are dealing with these different policies. I think within when you start talking about government and you start talking about impacting people that are getting, you know, that have to go to their job, that's where you really start to cross a line. And, you know, there's a lot of talk about, you know, there are employees right now that you can't get a job because of the way sometimes maybe the way you dress, the way, you know, if you have tattoos, you know, people aren't going to hire you because maybe they don't want that as the face of their organization. And so they're arguing that private companies have a lot more leeway than maybe government. You know, this all does fall back on one important thing in terms of the vaccination, though. The vaccination is still categorized as an experimental vaccine. And so that really separates this out because, you know, there's a ruling by, I believe it's the Supreme Court, that says that you can't require experimental vaccines of employees. And so, you know, that's going to be something that would have to filter down to the state level. But, you know, that would all go away if the CDC went ahead and decided that this wasn't an experimental vaccine. But the FDA, who does that, has a long history of taking years to make sure that things like this are safe. And there are some issues that they're seeing. Now, you can argue that these are very minor, but still, they're issues. They're keeping it still in the experimental phase. And I think that is an out that a lot of people, when you start seeing that might be filing lawsuits or challenging these decisions. I mean, even Superintendent Hanna was not comfortable with getting on board with promoting the vaccine across Leon County for personal reasons. And so it will be interesting to see if it is true that these cases start to wane in the next 2 or 3 weeks, if all of a sudden we see a very quick change in these policies. Obviously, the one at DeLeon County with the condition of employment, that's not one that you want to keep changing back and forth. So, you know, you can imagine that they won't make a change there until it's clear that the risk has reached a very low level. So, all right, when we get back, we're going to pivot from the COVID talk. We're going to talk more about a couple projects that were voted on. We're going to look at the differences. It involves a lot of money, millions of dollars, and the future of some vacant land downtown. So we'll take you down that road when we get back. I'm Steve Stewart. You're listening to Above the Fold.
If it's local and it matters, it's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.
All right, welcome back to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3. It's Thursday. Above the Fold is brought to you in part by Epps Decorating Center. If you're a homeowner, you should always be looking for ways to increase the value of your home, but it doesn't always have to be a major project. A fresh coat of paint can transform the interior and exterior of your home in a dramatic way. And I recommend you start with a visit to Epps Decorating Center, Tallahassee's premier Benjamin Moore paint retailer. Whether you need interior, exterior paint, high-end, or commercial-grade coatings, Epps Decorating Center is ready to serve you and answer all your questions. Give them a call at 385-6649. That's 385-6649. We appreciate their sponsorship. All right, so we'll pivot from the COVID talk to millions of dollars. Talk about vacant land. The city of Tallahassee has some vacant land on their hands downtown. They had two properties. One of them is called the Chevron Block and the Johns Block, where they were talking about putting a convention center, a performing arts center. But that fell through. So they've got these two vacant lots that are valued around $8 million. And then they've got some vacant land where the homeless shelter used to be. And some land around that area. And so what I wanted to do is highlight how they've dealt with both of these, this vacant land. There was two different votes. There was a 5-0 vote and a 3-2 vote. And the vote on the land downtown where the Performing Arts Center was going to be was the 3-2 vote. And it also made it in to the opinion piece by City Commissioner Jeremy Matlow related to the federal corruption trial. And so he was arguing that this was reflective of something that is unethical, the process that was adopted in this vote, this 3-2 vote. So I wanted to go through with a couple of the parameters on these two different projects, because the other project that deals with property on Tennessee Street was a 5-0 vote, and Commissioner Matlow and Jack Porter, who voted against the lots downtown, voted for the CRA plan. And so I wanted to go through them real quick, all right? And so if we look at the pricing, it's sort of interesting that the money that's involved is coming from a couple different entities. On the lots where the Performing Arts Center was going to be built, they sold that to a developer for $8 million. Now, they did not take any bids, although it was known for the last year or so, year and a half, two years, that this property was up for sale. There were signs on the property. It was put in a newspaper. There have been some stuff mailed around to property owners near that. Realtors in town knew about it. And they did a staff appraisal, which came out around $7.7 million. Now, they decided, because of the developer that was involved out of Houston, Texas, who had a very good reputation of building five-star hotels, they were very impressed with the fact that they wanted to come to Tallahassee. So they were able to get the votes. Again, this is a policy. It's not a law. It's a policy to waive getting the second appraisal. Their view, the people that were in the majority, the 3-2, was that, look, this is a good deal. We're going to get $8 million, and we've got a partner here, a developer, that's going to come in and build, and who has a history of doing things like this. And so, again, based on the appraisal, they sold the property for $8 million. Now, what are the parameters involved? Well, obviously, the developer is going to have to go through the permitting process and deal with stuff that is in ordinance or that is in the comprehensive plan. but they're not going to have to deal with the city. They bought this. They're not going to have to deal with certain parameters or certain requirements that the city put in with the contract, because there weren't any put in there. In other words, they can go ahead, and if they deal with the laws that are in place with regards to permitting, they can go ahead and build their hotels. And the city gets the $8 million. Who's involved? Again, not insiders. This is not, other than the real estate broker, this developer has no ties here locally that I could tell. They are from Houston, Texas. So they see this as an opportunity in a state capital. They came in, they're going to pay their $8 million, and they're going to move from there. Okay. Now, that was the 3-2 vote, and this is the issue that, you know, Commissioner Matlow was very concerned about, not getting another proposal and then putting it out for bid. He actually wanted to put it more out for bid in the sense of going out and seeing if they could get a better deal, raise more money. The people that voted the majority figured out, hey, look, the money's good, plus it fits what we think we want there. So that was that vote. Now, the other one was the CRA project, which has been in the works, the Community Redevelopment Agency project, which has been in the works for a number of years, and it deals with CRA land next to or near the homeless shelter. CRA owns that land, and there's a proposal that came forward from a group that has ties to here locally. Now, the guy that's heading up the group, Tony Brown, is from Jacksonville, but it also involves some land next to the CRA land, which is owned by the Bethel Church, which the Bethel Church is very involved with issues at the city of Tallahassee. And so, again, this deal has many more ties locally than the other deal, which was a 3-2 vote. Now, this involves $6.5 million of CRA money being given to the developer to develop land in a vision that the CRA thinks is worthy of giving them the CRA land in addition to $6.5 million. Now, the issue here is the part of the proposal is they're going to have to buy some land from the Bethel Church. So, you know, it looks like there's some CRA money that is going to be really going back around to somebody here locally. Now, the question is, were there appraisals? Look, the CRA land was part of this agreement was the CRA land is going to be provided to this developer, given he meets some pretty stringent conditions, which, again, conditions that weren't tied up with the other land downtown. But as far as I can tell, there are no appraisals referenced in the agenda item that the commission or that the CRA voted on. And like I said, the parameters are the CRA has much more control on what's going on this land, which would be different from the private developer from Houston who's not going to have to, will have to deal with the regular permitting process. So now the vote on this was 5-0. This is a project that I will tell you this has raised some eyebrows from people that I've talked to behind the scenes. There's some question if it's ever going to get done. But it is, again, something that is, if you look at this, would raise more questions than the other sale because of some of the concerns of insider dealings that might be applicable here. But, you know, this raises the question of why is the deal downtown sort of being painted with this brush of corruption and the CRA deal is not? And the concern here is this. Look, I think as we move forward, we can have policy discussions and policy differences. The development of the land downtown was a 3-2 vote. The majority of city commissioners, it didn't involve anybody here locally. And the policies can be changed by a majority vote of the commission. This is a political deal that impacts policy. It is not about unethical behavior or corruption. So look, you can go ahead and make the argument, and I think Jeremy Matlow did a good job of arguing what he wanted, but it's not to be confused with being unethical or corrupt at this point. I mean, there's no evidence of that. Now, when you move to the CRA deal and you get a 5-0 vote with no questions asked, I mean, I think that raises some questions about why are you voting against one and not for the other. Now, look, you know, when you start talking about the nuance, you do have more control over the CRA land than you do the land downtown. And again, that becomes a policy issue, And I think we have to be careful, just because we're going to have policy issues, that we don't label these as being unethical or corrupt. So anyway, those are the differences in those two deals. And there are differences, but the question is, do they rise to the level of what some elected officials may want to use as a, you know, a way to raise other issues, ethical and corruption issues. So anyway, all right, well, that's all the time we have for today. Went by rather quick, but remember, next Tuesday, tune in at 12 o'clock, not 11, for another edition of Above the Fold. Have a great afternoon.